Hey guys, it's Candace.
And it's Elena.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime.
You're here.
I'm glad you're here. Sorry, in our last episode I was like, go away if you don't like it. I don't want you to go away.
I don't either.
Would you though please present your corrective criticism in a nice way?
Yeah.
Yeah, we want this show to be,
it's not that enjoyable. We don't want criticism, because we know that's what makes us better.
Yeah, of course. Say, hey, I love when you guys do this type of show, or
hey, you can do this better.
Yeah, because we want to improve.
Yes.
And also go give us a rating if you like us. If you like us only.
Yeah.
No, it's 5 stars or nothing.
I love when we get messages, just any messages too. From anybody. I'm like, ooh, a new message.
I know. I love it. I recently got an email from a friend of Angie. We covered Angie and Alfredo.
Oh, yes.
Their murders several weeks ago. And she wrote in, it's nice when victims' families and friends listen to the episode and feel, you know, I mean, I'm sure it's really, really hard for them to listen to.
Of course,
yeah. But it's nice to know that, you know, your loved one is not being forgotten. So,
yeah. And anyway. we really do try to honor them in a good way. So,
yeah. And I did read a comment that kind of made me sad. It was actually on Angie's episode, and someone was not happy that we were laughing during the episode.
Okay, I did not see that. I'm sorry.
So here's the thing. I'm just a really awkward person, and you have to just know my heart is for the victims. And I never, ever, ever would make light of a crime or someone's murder. I think it's just that speaks to my awkwardness and my storytelling and my imperfections. And my heart is for telling the victim stories. And so I would never.
It's the thing about it is that what we talk about is so dark.
Yeah.
And really, it's not that we're making light of what happened to them. It's just we have to have a positive atmosphere, because we can't stay in that. And that's just who we are.
And I do. And the other thing is that I'll make a joke during when I'm telling a story, and often it's out of like anger. It's out of anger that the laws are the way they are.
Mm-hmm.
It's out of anger that our victims are murdered because someone was let out of prison when they shouldn't have been. And that's my way of, you know, being like, what am I to do here?
Yeah. We mean no disrespect ever.
For sure. Oh, Lena, you're in the clear here. I think it's really just me, but, and maybe I'm overreading it. But I still would like to say I would never, ever make fun of.
Absolutely not.
Yeah. My heart is, and if you've been listening to the show long enough, you know, you already know that.
Oh, yeah.
This was like a person who had just listened to that episode.
Oh,
so
okay.
So I get where they're coming from.
Yeah.
That's their first interaction and they don't know me that well. So
it could seem.
That. Yeah.
Okay.
But anyways, yeah. So with that being said, let's get into my story
here. Okay, come on.
So on Thursday afternoon, November 16th, 1995, Elaine Sobeck was waiting by the phone for her daughter, Linda Sobeck, to call her back and let her know how her job had gone that morning. Linda was a successful model.
Ooh.
And when Elaine spoke with her just before 11 a.m., Linda told her that she was doing this last-minute photo shoot And she was like running late. So she even kind of had to rush her mom off the phone to go meet this photographer.
That now, sounds fun.
It does sound fun. And she was probably like, okay, baby, you go on, girl. So after hours of waiting with not hearing anything back, Elaine got a little impatient and called Linda, but she reached Linda's paging service message. You remember those back in the day? And Linda had recorded this message just after she got off the phone with her mom. The message said that Linda would be unreachable until later in the day and would return phone calls that evening. Well, Elaine was promised a phone call that afternoon. Mm. So while she was like not a helicopter parent by any means, something felt off. Mm-hmm. A mother just knows, you know. And after a couple more pages with no returned call and a growing pit in her stomach, Elaine contacted Linda's best friend, Brooke. Well, Brooke learned that Linda had missed an important costume fitting that afternoon.
Oh, no.
So she is now getting a call from her best friend's mom saying she hasn't heard from her. And now Brooke's freaking out.
Yeah.
So Elaine and Brooke did not hesitate to call police and report Linda Sobeck missing.
I love when your friends and family are so in tune to who you are and where you're at that they know something's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll get into it, but Linda was that type of person. She was very accountable.
Okay.
So Linda Elaine Sobeck was born July 9th.
Oh.
My birthday, June 9th, 1968. That was not the year I was born, but as she grew up in South Bay in Los Angeles County, she was described as sunshine, as sunny as California. Like her friend said, if you looked up the definition of a California girl, there would be a picture of Linda.
Oh, wow.
She was outgoing. She was easy to get along with. And she was very close to her family. She was very positive. She spoke kindly of others. No one heard a bad, you know, her say a bad thing about anybody else. And if she had something negative to say, she would put it in her diary.
Oh, aw. If you have nothing say, nice to say, don't say anything.
Say it to your diary.
Exactly. Write it in your diary.
Get it out of your system, girl. But from a very young age, she wanted to be a star. She would say, you know, someday I'm going to make it big. And everyone believed her because she had a charisma that could take her anywhere she wanted to go. Her parents lived just a few miles away from her, and they spoke all the time, sometimes multiple times a day. At 20 years old, she snagged a spot on the cheerleading team of the Los Angeles Raiders, which, if you don't know, is a major football team over here. Go sports. She didn't light up the room. She lit up the stadium.
Oh, wow.
And she did that for 5 seasons until she decided to pursue modeling and acting full time in 1993.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Due to her growing success, I mean, she was booking things right and left. Linda moved in with a few of her friends into a big, beautiful house right off the boardwalk in Hermosa Beach, California.
Ooh.
I mean, what?
Yeah.
How much did that cost? I'm wondering. Like to these days, I bet it's millions.
If that tell you you're doing things, I don't know what it is. I know.
She could step out her door and walk right down to the beach in a matter of seconds. But she was living. She was living everybody's dream. She was 5'4", blonde hair, blue eyes, fit, stunningly beautiful. Oh. And her heart just made her even more beautiful. You just thought, how are you even a real person right now? Like,
well, it's interesting that you say she's 5'4" and a model.
Yeah.
Like that, you don't hear about that.
So here's the thing.
Her personality was big enough to...
Yeah, in my research, I had learned this about her, that she wasn't into high fashion modeling. She did more like bikini stuff. She did car magazines, fitness magazines.
Oh.
So she was a little more, you know, because she was shorter, she didn't do runway stuff and high fashion, okay, but she did do the other stuff. And there was plenty of work for her.
Good.
Yeah. She took really good care of her body. She made sure that she was in shape for all those modeling jobs coming her way. She would avoid alcohol and she wouldn't stay out super late. So she made sure she got enough rest for the next day. And at 27 years old, Linda became a born-again Christian. Oh. I think she was raised in the faith, but she had recently decided that that was something she wanted to prioritize. So she got baptized in her friend's pool in her backyard.
That's so and sweet.
Dedicated herself to the Lord.
You go, girl.
She wanted to make that a priority moving forward, which is it's also interesting, don't you think? Because of the industry she was in.
It's difficult to.
And the people she was around and the kind of crowds. Like, you can tell that she was, like I said, she didn't go to those parties. She didn't need to network. She didn't need to crawl on the floor to get a job. And she wasn't going to do that. She had standards. But it's interesting to me that she chose that time in her life to, you know, get back into her faith.
Love it.
One of Linda's fellow Raiderettes said that Linda dreamed of getting married and having babies someday. She was a family girl. She loved her friends' babies, her cousins, and whoever she had in her life that was a baby. She loved it. But for now, Linda was living her dreams. And like I said before, she was gracing the cover of Fitness and Auto magazines, and she was even breaking into acting at this point. She had a boyfriend at this time, though most reporting doesn't even mention him. So they had spoken about 8 a.m. the morning she vanished, and they talked about attending her parents' barbecue that was going to be happening that weekend. He was flying back in town from being out of town. I don't know if it was work or pleasure. But she even toyed with picking him up from the airport. But she had a jam-packed day that day, which is why her mom, then her friends, really grew concerned when they didn't hear from her after that last-minute photo shoot.
Yeah.
So remember that important wardrobe fitting that Linda was a no-show for that afternoon? Well, it was for a very small role that she had landed on the hit show Married with Children.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes. There was no way she would have missed that. You know,
that was big time.
Right. In this industry, you know, you don't show up for a wardrobe fitting, they're going to pick someone that looks exactly like you to do that same part, and they're not going to bat an eyelash. So she was eager to branch into acting, and this opportunity was massive. I mean, she was going to get primetime exposure, possibly network with other people on set that could lead to bigger and better things. The modeling agency that she worked for had no record of this last-minute photo shoot that her mother was talking about to police.
Weird.
They're trying to figure out where she went, who she was with. And this, the modeling agency said, we didn't book it for her. It must have been a freelance job that she took. It's, you know, it's the hustle of the entertainment industry. When you're working, a working model or actor, you may not always go through your agency to get jobs. You may be approached by someone and agree to do something.
And that's not a conflict of interest or something?
You know, I don't know. I was some contracts will forbid you to do things like that.
Okay.
I don't know if hers did. Maybe not all of them. Okay. I think, you know, just starting out and getting on your feet, you're willing to do pretty much anything.
Okay.
Unlike in most missing persons cases, when Linda's mom contacted Hermosa Beach Police Department to report her daughter missing, they didn't dismiss her. How refreshing.
Yeah. They're like, this beautiful girl, we got to find her.
And they did what we beg police to do every time. They said, you know what? Linda was grown. Yes, she can come and go as she wants. But they quickly looked at her life. She lives on the beach. Wow. She has a boyfriend. She has this successful career. Why would she leave all this behind?
She wouldn't.
She wouldn't. And then she has all these family members and friends saying, you know, she's accountable. Like, she wouldn't do this. Now, in retracing Linda's steps leading up to her disappearance, I bet they felt just stumped because nobody knew where she was. Nobody knew about this photo shoot.
Yeah.
Nobody knew. Elaine Sobeck did her best to provide police with a good starting point. Mm-hmm. What she had. She knew her daughter well, but she really didn't know much about this photo shoot. She didn't.
But thank God she even told her mom about.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. Because actually, Linda had coffee with her, one of her roommates that morning, and she didn't even mention the photo shoot to her roommate.
Oh, okay.
And I'll, like, once we get through this story, I'll kind of talk about why I think that is. You'll have to remind me.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes when I edit these episodes, I'm like,
oh, we never.
I'll get back to that. And I never get back to that. You're going to have to remind me.
Okay.
So she didn't have much valuable information to give police. She only knew that she was going to this meeting with some guy named Chuck. Mm-hmm. She didn't know the location of the shoot. She didn't know, you know, what agency he was with. Nothing really useful. Chuck could be anybody. In Linda's pager message, she said that she was going to be on a remote shoot and would be unreachable. So here's another small piece of the puzzle. Remote. She didn't expect to be in contact with people for a certain amount of time.
Okay.
But there's a lot of remote places in Los Angeles. I mean, tons. So where do they even start? Investigators learned that Linda had a lunch date that she had canceled shortly after speaking with her mom that morning, telling the friend that she was going to do a last minute photo shoot.
Okay.
So they were getting the impression that this photo shoot was the key to figuring out what happened to her.
For sure.
For whatever reason, she had squeezed this into her morning ahead of a full day of plans. So Elaine stressed to police her daughter was very careful, safety conscious. I mean, when it came to her career, she wasn't naive. She wasn't easily drawn into sketchy situations. She had been in the business long enough to know, you know, how it goes. And that there's a lot of people that say they're photographers. There's a lot of people that say they're agents and they just want to meet with you and do this and that and the other. I remember as a kid when I was in acting, I remember meeting with several agents.
Yeah.
And I remember getting the weirdest feelings at some of these places. Like, I mean, of course, my parents were there with me, but I just remember thinking, you're an agent? Like, this office doesn't look like an agent's office. Something doesn't
feel right.
Yeah, it didn't. So anyone can be an agent. It doesn't mean you go with them. The tight-knit group of models in the area kept in touch, and there were photographers and other industry professionals that would get blacklisted. You know, so they'd work with someone that was creepy or a situation that was uncomfortable to them, and they would start telling people, like, don't work with this person, or maybe their agency would get a bad vibe from somebody and blacklist them.
Okay.
Linda took no exception to that. I mean, if she took a freelance job, she would only consider jobs with people that were
reputable,
people that she'd maybe heard of before. And she often provided locations and the names of the people she was with to her roommates or friends. Sadly, this time she didn't because it was last minute.
Yeah.
Speaking of Linda's roommates, they were able to provide police with information about what Linda may have been wearing that day.
Okay.
So there were a pair of UGG boots that Linda owned. They were called Funky.
Okay.
In a book I read. they were missing from her closet. Mm. So that could have been part of the attire. They also identified a couple pieces of clothing that were unaccounted for. And I think one of her roommates saw her that morning. The one she had coffee with.
Okay.
I'm not sure if Linda changed after coffee.
Yeah, you'd
for this last minute photo shoot meeting. She probably did. So they were just kind of looking around her room to see if they could find anything that was missing. But nothing else was taken that would indicate she planned to leave overnight.
Right.
Her toothbrush, her makeup, her other personal care items, they were all left at home. 4 days passed. 4 days since Linda was last seen, and the police appealed to the public for help in locating her. giving what little information they had, because they really didn't have much information. They posted pictures of her, as well as a description of her make and model, of the car she drove with the license plate number. Because Linda did drive away from her home that day in her car, and they still hadn't found her car.
Yeah, but she hadn't contacted her parents. She hadn't contacted her boyfriend.
But usually, I mean, you know, in missing persons cases, we sometimes will find the car like the next day or a couple days later. And we'll talk about why it wasn't found for so long. So police see, this is my awkwardness. That's why I'm laughing. Police also announced a reward for $20,000 for information leading to Linda's whereabouts.
Okay.
Back in 95, that was a good chunk of money.
Yes, it was.
Everything the media were putting out there was also printed and distributed on missing person flyers paid for by her boyfriend and her friends. Her loved ones took to the streets, handing them out just by people passing by, going into businesses, hanging them on light poles. They were even knocking on car windows as they were stopped at the traffic light, handing them out. Pretty soon, everyone in that town had Linda's face fresh in their minds. They even began fundraisers for more money to add to the reward fund.
Okay.
They thought, you know, maybe that's not enough. Maybe we need more.
Right.
So they started getting pledges from people and businesses to add to the pot. One of Linda's roommate's boyfriends stepped up, printing off 53,000 flyers.
Holy moly.
So he worked for a real estate agency.
Okay.
And so he printed off listings and sent them out to clients or, you know, people in the area.
Yeah.
So he printed out all these flyers and included them in these listing pamphlets that he's sending out.
Bless his heart.
Right. That's amazing.
That really is.
This is not enough, you say, to find Linda? Well, they also hired a famous private investigator who'd worked for people like Michael Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah, Michael Jackson, Sylvester Stallone. Linda's parents would speak to news outlets and radio stations any chance they got.
Yeah.
So that the news cycle wouldn't move on to something else. And in much of my research, the police that were interviewed said that this was, you know, it was shortly after the O.J. Simpson trial. And Linda's coverage was everywhere. Like, they were really surprised at how much coverage she was getting.
They just talked about her every day. Were the squeaky wheel.
That's it. There were so many people that loved her, that wanted to find her, and they were going to, every single one of them were doing everything that they could. I mean, when you really think about that,
yeah,
each and every person were kicking up dirt.
That's amazing.
It is amazing. Linda's parents' home became a gathering place for updates and uncomfortable discussions about what might have happened to her.
Right.
Those hours and minutes with no information have to be the most excruciating part of having a missing loved one. I know, you know, Savannah Guthrie and her family are going through that right now. That case is wild. And I don't know what's going to happen by the time this episode airs.
Yeah.
We're recording this in advance. And that's just a story for another time. But police were doing what they could. It wasn't like present day where they had all this cell phone data and
What I was going to ask.
There was no CCTV that I saw in any of my research, and so they're really, you know, antiquated in this sense.
So like the phone numbers coming through the pager, there's like not a system that they could go to.
I didn't see anything about that. And now that I'm thinking about it, and now that you asked that question, when we cover these cases where there's pagers involved, I never hear about phone records.
Pager data.
Yeah. Pager data.
it's always cell phone. Well, like, she didn't have a cell phone.
Was it ever stored anywhere? I mean, I don't remember, because I had a pager, which I had no business having a pager. I only knew you.
Hey, but we would send those codes to each other.
Boob. I only knew you and my parents, but I had a pager and like, I don't know, was there a cell phone bill that, was there a bill that came through that said all the people that?
It had to.
Yeah, I'm surely.
Anyway,
we're getting off in the weeds. But the police had really been working this case since day one, since that first phone call with her mother, and they were running down hundreds of leads a day.
Wow.
Hundreds of leads a day.
Man.
Authorities had a huge breakthrough, though, when a man called them shortly after their press conference to tell them he'd found some discarded photos of Linda a couple days before. So this was just 2 days after Linda went missing.
Okay. And he's just now?
Well, he didn't know. He's just now seeing her picture on the... Yeah, he didn't know her. So a man doing community service was emptying trash cans near the Angeles National Forest when he came across a beautiful trash can.
Oh.
Beautiful in that he looked inside and saw pictures of Linda.
Okay.
And he was like, wow, why would this someone throw these away? Yeah. And I don't think he was being creepy.
Okay.
I think just right at the top, he sees this beautiful blonde woman. Yeah. He's never seen her before. And these photos were professional.
Okay.
They were like, you know, some of them were 8x10. They were obviously professionally taken.
Developed. Okay.
And she was in swimsuits. She was next to cars. And so he took them because he's like, well, I can't believe someone would have thrown these away. And he gave them to the National Park Service worker that was there. I'm assuming that this guy was just doing community service.
Okay.
And he said to this guy, this other guy, here.
Somebody
needs to take these because they're just too beautiful. So this National Park Service worker was like, wow, those are nice pictures. So he put them in his backpack and really, he didn't think any more about them. He forgot they were in there until he sees this woman's photo on TV. Yeah. And he's like, oh my gosh. So he called police immediately to report these. And he turned them over to police. Now, detectives knew it was a long shot, but they thought, I wonder if there's anything else in those bins.
Yeah, let's go look.
So they rushed over to the Angeles National Forest dumpsters to find that they were still full.
Oh.
Those dumpsters had not been emptied since the day the community service guy was there emptying the trash cans. Okay. Thank God. They could not believe it.
Yeah.
So police started gathering bags and bags and bags of stinky, disgusting trash.
It's not a glamorous job.
Oh, do you remember when I lost my retainer on Nacho Day and I had to dig through, like at camp? Yes. I had to dig through the trash. Yeah. Oh, I'm feeling triggered, man. But they were looking for treasure. They were looking for Linda, and that was what motivated them. They spent hours and hours and hours up to their elbows in garbage before they found it. Linda's date book.
What?
Yeah. They were hopeful to find something written inside with a location or maybe a phone number of who she was meeting that day. But there was nothing but other appointments and some photographs with her and her family.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. They felt pretty disappointed. But the important thing was that they could confirm that Linda's stuff was discarded there.
Hmm.
For whatever reason. And now they have an area to start looking.
Yeah, because could her body be here?
Right. So the Angeles National Forest is about 1,000 square miles of vast desert, sand, brush, peaks, valleys.
Oh, man.
Snakes, I'm sure. It's not for me.
I can't believe you even said that word.
Oh, I feel like I need a shower now. It was not going to be easy to search this place. So they knew they needed to get to work right away. Mm-hmm. Police units got out there with canine units and helicopters. Her friends and family were like, okay, we'll go search too. Yeah. So they start walking around and they actually found some more of Linda's stuff. just thrown out there.
Oh.
They found a curling iron. They found a couple documents that had her name on them.
Oh my gosh.
Clearly stuff that was hers that was just thrown out there.
Okay, so we're getting somewhere.
So they are getting somewhere. They didn't find her or any sign of her.
Okay.
So they were like, let's turn our attention back to the trash, because they did have a lot to go through.
Yeah.
They had found Linda's date book, and they, you know, they were like, well, let's just keep looking. Maybe there's something in something. This time they hit gold.
Oh.
One of the detectives found an owner's manual for a vehicle. And because he's freaking genius, he's like, well, I'm going to open it. I know it's a manual, but like, you know how people fold things and put them in their owner's manual in their dashboard?
Okay.
So he opens it and he finds this folded up lease agreement for a Lexus SUV. And there was a name on it.
Oh.
Charles Rathbun.
Oh, did he go by Chuck?
Maybe. Huh. Maybe he did. So they didn't just have this guy's name, though. It had his address. It had his phone number.
Well.
It had his driver's license. The only thing it didn't have was his favorite color on it.
Oh.
So there was even a date on the lease agreement indicating that he picked up that vehicle on November 16th,
oh?
The day Linda went missing.
What?
Authorities were like, well, should we call him? Should we go by the house? Like, we have all his information. Like, yeah. Which...
Go by the house. Yeah, don't call him.
What should we do here?
Yeah.
They start looking into this guy. Charles Rathbun was a legit photographer.
Oh.
He had photos in major automotive magazines. He had worked with everyone who's anyone in the industry. So they called him up and asked him if he had had contact with a woman named Linda Sobeck. And he said, well, yeah, I actually saw her Thursday, which was the day she went missing. He told police that he met Linda in a Denny's parking lot and that she sat in the passenger seat while he looked through her portfolio.
Okay.
After a short conversation, he told Linda, you know, I just don't think you're right for this job.
Mm.
And she got out, got in her car, and drove away.
Right.
It was a huge revelation to detectives. He just admitted to having Linda in his car.
Okay.
At some point.
Yeah.
So they asked Charles to come into the station for a more formal interview. And they thought, you know, while he's on his way, let's have somebody run over to Denny's.
Oh, yeah.
And they weren't looking for a grand slam. They were looking for Linda's car. And there it was. Linda's white 1992 Nissan Sports Coupe.
Okay.
Was sitting right there in the parking lot. Remember, her car description, what? The license plate, it was all over all over the place, all over the news, all over the flyers, right next to her face. But we're talking about Denny's, the restaurant that never sleeps. I mean, you've got cars pulling in and out. There's never a time when that parking lot should be empty.
Right.
Right? So there's never a time when someone's like, oh, that white car's still there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, there's just always white cars. And she's got a two-door sports coupe that looks just like everybody else's two-door sports coupe.
Okay.
So they find Linda's car. It's still got the anti-theft device on the steering wheel. Mm.
Okay, yeah.
Kids these days will not know what that is, but just look it up. She had not gone anywhere in that car after she met him in the parking lot that day. So the more they look into this Charles Rathbun, which is a stupid name and it's hard to say, they were starting to see that while he was successful in the industry, he didn't have the best reputation.
Oh.
He was arrogant. Mm-hmm. He was rude. And people didn't like working with him. And most surprisingly, his behavior kind of gave people the impression that he didn't like women very much.
Oh, gosh.
Particularly blondes.
Oh, man.
So he'd be cordial enough while he was snapping the pictures, even kind of flirty, like, oh, sexy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I remember as a kid.
Oh, no.
Doing photo shoots and the photographer saying sexy. And I just remember thinking, no. But anyways, when you're an adult and they're saying sexy, you know, move your hair, do this, do that. When he would stop photographing them and go give them notes like, hey, this time turn a little bit this way, do this or that.
Okay.
He would put them down. He would insult them.
What?
Yeah. And say really rude things to them. And he was slowly making his way onto that blacklist I was talking about earlier, because agencies were starting to get disgruntled. You know, their talent was starting to be like, I don't like that guy. And so they're starting to hear this too. People were just getting sick of his crap. Even worse, and probably the most striking thing that convinced police that Charles had something to do with Linda's disappearance, was that he had a prior arrest for raping a coworker in Ohio.
Oh my gosh.
Here's how that went. It's one sentence. He claimed it was consensual and he was acquitted of the crime. Lovely.
Yeah. And here we are.
Here we are. Yeah. So police prepared a warrant to search Charles' home and SUV that he had rented for that photo shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, while they're waiting for him to come to the station, because he still has not come in, they're like, we're going to go park outside his house.
Okay.
Because they're like, we just don't want him to make a run for it or anything. Because he hadn't come in.
Right.
Why? Why hadn't he come in? It's been a while and he said he was on his way and he's not there. So while they're staked outside his house, officers see a couple people come over. One ended up being Charles's attorney.
Oh.
And the other ended up being a friend who just so happened to be a sheriff's deputy.
Oh.
It seemed like no time had passed before a woman came running out of Charles' front door, bleeding.
What?
She ran straight to the police and told them that Charles was freaking out, waving his gun and threatening to shoot himself when the gun went off and grazed her in the arm. Thank God it was just a graze and she wasn't actually, you know, significantly wounded. But it was at that point that they went and ordered Charles and the other person who they learned was his attorney out of the home at gunpoint.
Whoa.
And they took Charles into custody to the station, you know, for that appointment that he, the standing appointment he had. Now they finally got his booty in that hot seat and it's time for him to cut the crap and cut to the chase.
Yeah.
He told police that, okay, I rented this SUV simply to take photos of it for the car magazine gig that he had. And then he said he returned it the next day. He further tried to distance himself from Linda by telling detectives when they asked, you know, when's the last time you've been to Angeles National Forest? And he said, it's been weeks.
Okay,
so
sure.
This is weeks before she went missing. They just plain didn't believe him. I mean, no.
Then how did he...
convincing.
Yeah.
His lies were not convincing. So they presented him with some of the findings. They said, look, we found Linda's car. It's been in that parking lot for days.
She
didn't leave in that car.
Right.
So did she ride with you? And I love the little seemingly innocuous tactics in questioning.
Mm-hmm.
Asking, you know, did she get a ride, quote unquote, did she get a ride with you, is such a soft approach to getting someone to admit that they had someone in their car. You know, like Charles is like, oh yeah, she got a ride with me. And to him, in his mind, it sounds good and innocent.
Innocent, right.
And police are like, okay, she's in your car now.
Yeah.
Like, I've got her in your car. I just love it. Anyways, I digress. So he did actually say, okay, look, I did hire her for that photo shoot. You know, I did. We went out to the desert to have her, I was going to have her pose with the car. And he said, I was just nervous that, you know, she's not been found, and that's why I lied.
Okay.
You know, that's why I said we parted ways. But he said, look, we drove out to the National Forest, we set everything up for the photo shoot, and he wanted to take photos of Linda driving the car. So he says, you know, I wanted her to do circles, kick up some dirt, like action shots.
Okay.
And so he's explaining this to her. She's kind of going, huh? And he's like, let me just show you. Let me just show you.
Oh.
So he gets in the car and he starts driving around in circles. At some point, he fishtails, like the back end of the car just goes wild and it spins out and hits Linda.
Oh,
he wow. hit her with the car on accident.
Oh, no.
And she died.
Okay.
He knew there was no saving her. Like he could, there was nothing that could be done. So he said, you know, I just buried her out there.
Okay.
Authorities had been through this before. They knew the odds at this point of finding Linda alive
mm-hmm.
were not in their favor. But Charles's story going from she drove away from Denny's to actually I took her out in the desert, I accidentally hit her with my car and buried her.
Yeah, that escalated a little quickly.
My Lord. Yes, yeah. It did. So it should come as no surprise that police didn't believe this version of events either.
Yeah, I didn't either.
The important thing, though, was that now they did believe that Linda was no longer alive
mm-hmm.
and that this missing persons case just turned into a homicide investigation and recovery. Charles agreed to take police to where he buried Linda. But that night in prison, he slit his wrist.
Shut up.
He ended up writing all over the wall in his blood that he didn't mean to hurt anybody.
Oh my gosh.
It was a clear suicide attempt. They took him to the hospital. He was fine. They wrapped his little bandages around his wrists. And one of the detectives went to the hospital and started questioning him because that's what you do. I mean, you go by someone's bedside and you go, so tell me more.
Yeah.
What's with this suicide attempt? Like
yeah.
feeling guilty about something? He said, are you still going to take us to her body? You were planning to kill yourself just then?
Yeah.
You're alive now.
Can you just
take us? Yeah. Can you take us to her body? As we agreed upon. So the next day, Charles accompanied the police into the desert and they searched for hours for Linda until they finally came to this big rock. And he said, I believe that's where she's buried.
So he couldn't, I mean, that's a big area to remember right. where you.
Right. And you know what? I think about this often too. When someone has buried someone out in the middle of nowhere and they're like, okay, I turned by this tree and they remember.
Yeah.
But I did read one report that Charles had taken them out before this and it was a goose chase and it was unfruitful. And
they felt like he was just playing around.
Right. But this time when they turned the rock over, they could see a knee sticking out
Lord.
Of the dirt. Oh. And they believed they had found her. It was the most beautiful knee they had ever seen.
Linda.
A crime scene unit was searching the surrounding areas and found tire impressions that matched the treads from the Lexus SUV that Charles had rented. Forensics techs were carefully unearthing Linda's body, almost speck of dirt, one at a time, trying not to disturb anything. And though it had been 8 days since Linda was killed, it was November. The national park was at a higher altitude, so her body was actually pretty well preserved.
Oh, okay.
So right away, they could tell she hadn't been hit by a car.
It doesn't match, sir.
No.
Chuck.
Not that they believed that story anyways, but Linda had clearly been beaten. They noticed blood behind her ear. Which was actually from her earring being driven into her neck from a blow to her head.
Oh.
She had bruises all over, which kind of makes you think, like, dead people don't bruise. So she must have been alive for a while after her beating.
Oh.
Which is heartbreaking. Just heartbreaking to think. She had rope burns on her ankles. And oddly, her body was really clean. You have to think she spent hours out there in the desert with this guy after being advanced on by this sick freak. You know she fought him off. You know she ran in the dirt. And so the female medical examiner believed that she had been washed and redressed.
Okay.
So Linda was wearing this top that had a zipper on it. And the zipper was zipped all the way up to her neck.
And she didn't wear it like that.
Well, the female medical examiner said, we don't wear our tops like that. Especially someone like Linda, who's a model. She's fit and beautiful. Like, she's going to pull that down a little bit.
Yeah.
Not in a sexual way, but and that's not even comfortable. No woman wears their thing, their thing zipped all the way up to the top. So that was an interesting observation. And Linda's autopsy did reveal that her cause of death was asphyxiation by strangulation. And they discovered something else. She had been sodomized.
No.
With some object.
What?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Now, Charles, he doubled down on her death being accidental. He said that she was drinking.
He hit her
with the car and she just died. Like, he also said the sodomy was consensual.
Oh, of course. Get just a like life. The previous woman.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
Don't flatter yourself, sir. He's like, well, I can prove it. I've got pictures that I took of Linda posing really provocatively, willingly participating in our sexual encounter the day she died.
Disgusting.
He draws this treasure map for his brother, to go get these rolls of film that he had stashed out in the desert. Why? I don't know.
Okay.
So his brother and his brother's girlfriend, they drive out there, follow his little treasure map of sorts, and they find 5 rolls of film that were out in the elements. Surprisingly, only one of those rolls of film was damaged.
Oh.
4 of the rolls were seemingly fine at a glance. Linda was posing in a couple different outfits in the desert hills. And then they started noticing that in some of the photos, her clothes were a bit rough. She had stockings on in one and they were a bit snagged. And it was raising questions as to, was she willingly posing for these photos? And some of them it looked fine, some of them they were questioning. Now, that last roll of film was damaged and double exposed. It was like waterlogged. Uh-huh. So it showed snippets of female genitalia.
Oh my God.
It showed hands and a dashboard. It was really, it didn't make sense. You could tell there were overlapping photos, like I said. And it didn't prove anything. It didn't prove that was even Linda that was being photographed in that particular roll of film. And something I didn't mention that I should have, but his brother, when he retrieved these rolls of film, he printed them all out. He didn't turn them over to police.
Oh, that's not a good idea.
That's kind of...
Tampering with evidence.
Thank you very much.
Come on, guy.
So they, in discovery, of course, they end up getting a hold of these photos. And so police worked with an aerospace company to figure out what they were looking at in these damaged photos. Like, can we enhance these photos? Can we separate the images somehow? And like the dashboard, they noticed that the dashboard, the steering wheel, the logo on the steering wheel, that was for an Oldsmobile. It was not even for the Lexus that he had that day. The hands in the photographs kind of looked a little more masculine. So they didn't even believe that was Linda at all in that one particular roll of film. They didn't know what to make of it, but they didn't believe that it had anything to do with Linda's photo shoot that day. Certainly didn't prove that she was a willing participant in any sexual act with him. Charles's murder trial lasted 5 weeks. Charles took the stand in his own defense. He was crying, doubling down.
Yeah.
Of the fact that Linda's death was accidental. Mm-hmm. Except this time he told the court something different than what he told investigators.
Oh, man.
He said this sexual encounter with Linda was consensual. They were having sex, and he was a little too rough for her liking, so she was swinging at him.
Okay.
And so in order for him not to get hit, he grabbed her arms and put his hand on her neck to hold her down because she was trying to hurt him, guys. My. And that compression ended up killing her.
No.
That one hand that he compressed her neck in those moments that she was trying to hit him killed her. That's what he told the court with a straight face. Now, they presented Linda's toxicology at trial. I'm not sure. I actually don't know if the defense presented this. Her blood alcohol level was 0.13, which could have been the equivalent of 3 drinks because she was a small girl. But nobody believed that Linda would have consumed alcohol at all.
Right.
I mean, she met this guy in the morning anyways. And she didn't really drink. What she's going to pregame, then go to Denny's and meet this guy. And besides, where was the alcohol? Like, it would have worn off by the time they had done. You know what I mean? It had been hours.
Mm-hmm.
She had been missing for 8 days. She'd been dead for 8 days. Like, none of that makes sense.
No.
So things weren't going Charles's way when he got her out there in the desert. The prosecution explained to the jury that he got her out there. Things clearly weren't going as he planned, and he made her drink alcohol.
Oh my gosh.
So he could maybe regain some sort of control over the situation. The jury learned that when police executed a search warrant at Charles's home, they found over 200 guns.
What?
I'm not sure if Alec Murdoch had 200 guns.
Why does anyone need that many guns?
Why? Anyway, they found a .45 caliber pistol with a reddish substance on the surface of that gun. And it tested positive for Linda's blood. Now, Linda wasn't shot, but she was sodomized. And they believe that this was the object she was sexually assaulted with.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So, so bad. As for the SUV, by the time police got their hands on that, you can imagine that the vehicle had been thoroughly cleaned. However, Josh or Chad or whoever cleaned the car that day missed a couple spots.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. The state presented evidence of Linda's blood in the back seat of the car and her blood and saliva on a car cover in the cargo area of the SUV. The jury deliberated for 6 hours, convicting Charles of sexual assault and first-degree murder. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. And Linda's mom shouted, "All right!" I love that.
Aww.
His brother Robert was never charged with
tampering with evidence.
Thank you. When he recovered those rolls of film from the desert, didn't give them to police and immediately just printed them off.
Like what? That's just too much work for them to charge?
I don't know. He should have been. Yeah. I mean, you know, that roll of film that was damaged, how do we know that he didn't damage that one roll of film?
Exactly. Or that there's some pictures being held off somewhere.
Right. And you know, that's a good point. I didn't dive into the fact that, you know, I didn't learn how many photos that they actually got their hands on.
Okay.
And so they could have said, okay, this roll of film carries 26 pictures and we got all 26 from this roll. I don't know if they were all turned over, but that is tampering with evidence
for sure.
By definition, he should have got slapped with something. Now, I think in the general population, they'll hear stories about women being in vulnerable positions, stories like Linda's, mm-hmm. that she ended up murdered. And they might say, well, you know, she shouldn't have gone off with a stranger. I've read commentary when we cover sex workers and they're like, well, they shouldn't be doing that.
Yeah. You shouldn't have been wearing that.
Yeah. I shouldn't have been wearing that. Mm-hmm. I think for working models and actors, you take the jobs that you can get until you reach that level of success where you have the luxury of choosing your own projects. Linda was stacking jobs. She was getting plenty of jobs. Mm-hmm. And she had heard of Charles Rathbun. She knew him to be someone who had worked with multiple people in the industry. Mm-hmm. She had seen his portfolio.
Yeah.
She believed that she was working with someone legit.
Yeah, he wasn't blacklisted at right. that point.
He wasn't blacklisted at that point. The saddest thing about this story to me, besides the fact that Linda was murdered, was that she was very safety conscious.
Yeah.
She fully expected to be brought back to her car that day. She had probably done things like this many times. Freelance jobs where, you know, they went to a separate location.
Mm-hmm.
But I bet it's highly likely that once he got her out there, she was like, this is not right.
Yeah.
I think once she saw how far afield they were going,
she knew she made a mistake.
That this was not right. And, you know, the police at the trial, I mean, prosecution at the trial, you know, painted this picture for the jury that he gets her out there, he takes her photos, something goes wrong, and he beats her up and kills her.
Uh-huh.
But her blood was in the car. Mm. Her blood was in the back seat. Her blood was in the cargo area. Mm. Oh, and I would just say maybe that was transfer, but her saliva was also found in the cargo area. So it makes me feel like at some point, maybe she got in the car to get away from him, or somehow she ends up in the car bleeding. So did that happen on the way there?
Mm. Was she transported out there?
Right.
I mean, yeah.
Was she transported against her will?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a question we should be asking. Maybe she didn't agree to go with him out there. Maybe she said, I'll follow you. And he just starts driving.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, take me back to my car. I'll follow you there. Like.
Yeah.
And those photos of her that he took, they are haunting to look at. Because you're like, at this point, does she know she's in danger?
Right.
And she's just going along with this to get it over with.
To make him happy, to make not upset him.
Like we talked about in our last week's episode, is she just trying to appease this person even though she's not comfortable with what's going on?
She's like, just, if I could just get through this.
I'll just take these pictures. I'll never do this again.
Yeah.
And then.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's really sad. And in some of the reporting, I read that somehow Linda's demise was brought on by herself.
Ew.
And
I mean, yes, it was a mistake. Yes, she made a choice that costs.
We all are as careful as we can be.
Yeah.
We can't control other people's actions.
In hindsight, you can say you should have took a friend with you or
told somebody
or
I remembered Betty, her roommate.
Oh.
The one she didn't mention this to at coffee that morning.
Okay.
So she mentioned that she had a 40s calendar shoot. It was like a 1940s themed calendar shoot that day. She mentioned of course, the costume fitting for Married with Children.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't mention this photo shoot. What I think was that Linda got called for this meeting. She hadn't agreed to the photo shoot yet.
Okay.
And she was just going to meet this guy and like maybe meet him and squeeze it in.
Okay.
That's why, you know, when she was on the phone with her mom, she had to go right away. I think she maybe wasn't planning the whole time to go do out this. To
the desert. Because if she would have said yes to that, that's a whole afternoon's worth of time.
It's hours. And she had that fitting. She had a whole another shoot that day. I mean, I'm not saying that she wouldn't have like booked a solid day like that, because maybe she was a hustler like that. But
it doesn't seem.
It seems like maybe he was like, well, let's do a trial, or, you know, I just want to, you know, maybe we could take a couple. He could have said just about anything.
Yeah.
To get her out of that parking lot.
But how did he get her to drink alcohol? That's just, wow. That's just so.
He could have forced her to drink it.
Absolutely. And nobody, I believe he did.
Not one person, and not including including myself, I don't believe that she would have had any alcohol before, during.
No.
Willingly. I mean, she was very professional.
She was focused and motivated. And yeah. She didn't let other substances control her. Yeah. She wanted to be in control of
exactly.
herself.
Exactly. And she was. So police firmly believe that he made her drink alcohol, that he had taken liquor out there in order to have her loosen up, or say, here, drink this, or whatever. So she'd be more compliant, more complicit.
Mm-hmm.
But she was not.
Yeah. And that's, she rejected his advances.
That's right.
And he got
butt hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So Linda, in the end, she did get the fame. She did get the fame. She did get the recognition. It's just for all the wrong reasons. And she could have been the next Goldie Hawn. Aww. Or the next Michelle Pfeiffer. She had so much potential.
Yeah.
And this guy, because he's such a loser and he has to hide behind a camera to get girls to hang out with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really sad. And I guess we can piggyback on last week's episode and say, you know, we can be as careful as we can be.
Yeah.
We can have the weapon on us. We can, but some things are out of our control.
Yeah.
And like, you step out of your house, you get in your car, you drive down the street. Who knows what you're driving down the street to?
Yeah.
You can walk out of your car in a Target parking lot and be abducted during the middle of the day. That's happened before.
Yeah. I know.
I mean, we take steps to be responsible and careful.
Yeah. I mean, I've heard
and
people,
she did.
I've heard people say, oh, nobody's going to mess with me, or, you know, you're not invincible. And I don't want to be all like Debbie Downer or sinister.
I say that all the time, Lena.
Really?
And secretly, I hope someone tries, because I kind of want to see.
See what you're made of.
Yeah, see what I'm made of.
Wow.
No, but you said you don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but it is something women need to think about.
And men are not invincible either.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have to watch our backs, especially in this evil world. I mean, we live in an evil world.
Oh, Lord.
You know, what I think about is, we can question all the time, like, she gave her heart to God. She was a Christian. She was baptized. Why would God allow this to happen to her?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, there was divine intervention with these people being able to find her pictures.
Yeah.
Like, had that guy not found her pictures, and then the park ranger, and then
had someone come along and put a banana peel over the pictures,
yeah,
maybe he wouldn't have seen them. Yeah. And, you know, I heard it put once, a woman who lost her daughter went to church and she asked the priest, like, I am in so much pain. How could a loving God, this God you say that exists, how could he allow this to happen to my daughter? And the priest said simply, this, it doesn't make it true. It doesn't make it right. But this really resonated with me because I've always asked that question.
I think everybody has asked this question. I think
everybody asked the question. And so this priest said, God allows the good people to be good and the bad people to be bad.
Oh.
And sometimes that overlaps.
I mean, that's so simple, but it's so simple, deep.
And it's, it, I was like, well, we do have free will. And so we can do whatever we want.
Yeah.
We protect ourselves in the way that we can.
Yeah.
And evil is out there.
Yes.
Doing what it can and what it wants.
It's a very good point.
So I just, like, I have, ever since I had Hazel, I've had crippling anxiety. I think I've always had anxiety. Like, I can think of times when I felt anxious and I didn't know that feeling, like what that feeling was. I didn't know what it was called. But I'm on medication. And if you feel overwhelmed with anxiety, you don't have to live like that. Like, I still get anxious, but especially with what we do and we tell these stories, I'm just so much more aware of things, which is why I carry my box cutter and why I'm going to go order some pepper spray.
That's why some of these stories that are suggested, I'm like, I can't read this right now.
I know. And it's even worse with kids. Even worse because I'm like, oh, Lord Jesus, we had a freaking scare. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast. We had a school shooting scare a couple of months ago or a month ago. I can't remember when it was. I've tried to forget about it. But someone in Cuba or wherever it was talking about North Texas schools.
Yeah.
And they had listed off multiple North Texas schools. And while my daughter's school was not one of them, there were a few in her district that were named.
Yes.
And so I'm like, well, she's not going to school tomorrow because it said, you know, we're going to tear up some kids. We're going to, you know, kill a bunch of people tomorrow.
It was awful. Yeah.
And we just were like, what do we do? Like, what do we do?
You know, they found the person that was doing.
Really?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
It was a young kid, like a teenage. I don't know if he was a teenager.
Was it here or actually in Cuba?
He was not in Cuba. He was in the United States, but he was just making these videos, making it look like.
God almighty.
Yeah, they found him.
Well, I sent her to school.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about it for hours. We went back and forth. We thought, she's in kindergarten. If she misses a day of school, who cares? Yeah. Like, it's not like she's studying for the SATs.
Right.
And trying to get into Yale now. Yeah,
this day is going to determine everything.
And then we also thought about the fact that, you know, if we give into this fear now.
Don't let fear run you.
Do we? I'm fine with fear. Because it's like the cost-benefit analysis. Like, it costs me nothing to keep her home.
Right.
Like, yeah, it would impede our work schedules and whatever, but so what?
Yeah.
In the worst case scenarios, we send her to school and something happens to her.
Yeah.
So I don't care about fear winning over, but every single time I have this anxiety or something is threatened or whatever. And the police had said, you know, this is not a credible threat. This is, you know, we're releasing this. And her school did release a statement saying, we do not believe this is a credible threat, but we are taking
it seriously.
Taking it seriously. And we're taking more precaution. And so I took Hazel lunch that day.
Yeah.
And aww. I went in there. My feathers were up. I was a peacock. And I said to the women at the front, I said, y'all looking? Y'all on high alert over here? She goes, oh, yeah, it's been a normal day. There's aww. Been nothing, you know, there's been nothing, no, nothing to note. And Hazel's lunch is at like 10:30 in the morning.
Oh, my goodness.
So I was like, nothing's going to happen until later in the day if it does happen. And anyways, I was like, I need to be there. I need to be there. I need to see her. Yeah. I need to get a feel. And I felt peace. I don't know what to say other than I just felt a peace about having her at school that day.
But that's why, I know we're way off topic right now, but that's why a lot of parents are going to homeschool here in Texas. And there's a very low attendance in the public schools right now.
Well, and you know what, Lena? My simple mind, and probably why I went to private school, when Daniel and I got married and started talking about having kids, and we're like, our kids are going to private school because it's safer. No, it's not safer.
No,
it's not. Just because there's a cross on the door,
right,
or a cross outside, there's still doors.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen recently private schools being shot up, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. You can be as hypervigilant as you can. You can try to protect yourself as much as you can. You know what? That's why I pray every day. I pray over myself. I pray over my family that God will just send his angels a hedge of protection. And he does. He protects us. So,
and I think all of that to say that Linda did not bring this on herself.
No.
She did everything that she could to keep herself safe. Something went wrong.
Yeah.
Something went wrong. And
she encountered evil.
And it's not on her.
No.
And I just hope she rests in peace. And I hope she's
flies high
in heaven, and she's up there just
praising Jesus,
living next to the beach. Is there a beach in heaven? you know, she's just sunshining and having the best time.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I got for you.
Oh, well, thank you for telling us of Little Miss Sunshine.
Yes.
Well, that was great. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it. Bye, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. Get connected with us by becoming a free member on our Patreon. Or for just $5 a month, you'll have access to bonus episodes, discussion groups, and much more. If you can't afford $5 a month, we get it. Inflation, am I right? Please consider leaving us a positive review and rating wherever you listen.
And don't forget merch. Support our podcast and show the love by sporting t-shirts with our latest designs, or grab an evidence bag to keep the chain of custody for all your valuables. Don't forget to follow our show on your favorite streaming app so you never miss an episode, and get photos and updates on our Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or our Cousins on Crime Facebook page. Have a case suggestion? Email us at cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.